Hey, everybody, it's Dr. Jamie, and the Fit and Fabulous podcast is a safe space for all kinds of discussion, and today's sponsor is Bush. They are all about self-love, a wellness brand that's changing the conversation around self-pleasure. Bush's self-love movement is all about empowering people to love their bodies and the amazing things that it can do by breaking the stigma around self-pleasure. After all, self-pleasure is the next big thing in beauty. You guys just watch. It's great for your health, it's great for your skin, and it's great for your mood. I'd love to introduce to you the favorite vibrator from Bush called the Empress 2. The Empress 2 is a vacuum clitoral stimulator. It's ergonomic. It has a cute pink design. It's got curves that fit all the right places. It's got powerful vacuum technology. It's 100% waterproof, perfect for bubble bath time. There's 40 pleasure combinations, something that works for every body. Magnet, USB charging, there's no fussing around with batteries. It's discreet in all the ways. Your business stays your business with a quiet design and discreet shipping. So you guys, embrace self-love by adding the Empress 2 to your cart right now. You can use the code FITFAB, that's F-I-T-F-A-B, for an exclusive 60% discount on the Empress 2. And please visit the link in the episode notes right now where you'll also find the discount code. Thank you to today's sponsor, Bush. Welcome to the Fit and Fabulous podcast with Dr. Jamie Seaman. Hello, everybody. It's Dr. Jamie. Welcome back to the Fit and Fabulous podcast. Today's episode, you guys are going to die. If you're a woman who've had a baby or over the age of 40, I highly suggest you go to the bathroom and pee. Just go ahead and pause the podcast really quickly and make sure you empty your bladder because this is going to be a pee your pants kind of episode. Thank you guys for everybody that's listened to our previous episodes on the Fit and Fabulous podcast. You guys have helped us grow this thing so quickly all around the world. You guys have seen me sharing the metrics so many different countries. And today's guest is not even originally from the United States. He's from Australia. I don't know if you guys have heard of him, but his name is Luke Cook. He was born in Australia, Sydney. Sydney, is that right?
Luke. That's correct.
Yeah. If you browse the internet, he's approximately 6 feet, 6 foot tall. He is married, but not cheating on his wife. He's not gay. And it's amazing what you can find on Google, Luke.
What's more amazing than what you can find is what people are asking.
Yeah.
Like, is he gay? Is he divorced? What's going on? And it's like, well, you know.
People are so unhappy with their own lives. They just want interesting things in other people's lives. Well, tell us, who's Luke Cook? Who are you? What have you done? Where have you been?
I'm an actor. First and foremost, I feel like I'm an actor, and then I do comedy stuff all over the internet, and I kind of got my big break doing a show called Sabrina, The Chilling Adventures of Sabrina, which was a spin-off of the 90s sitcom that's more serious, and I played Lucifer in that show, and the kind of entry of my character was a big deal, and then people just started following me on Instagram, and I was already doing silly stuff on the internet, but no one was following me, and then now I do silly stuff, but people follow me, which is kind of... is more fun. It's just more pressure because you really see what's funny and what's not. When no one follows you, you don't know what's funny and what's not. You don't know what works. But that's my deal.
It's not like the instantaneous laughter of like a comedy club.
Yes, exactly. Like that people tell you what's funny and what's not. Some people literally just tell you like, that's not funny.
Well, it's subjective. There's always going to be people on Instagram that don't. I mean, heck, yeah.
Favorite thing is when you see people tag their friends and go, oh my God, you got to follow this guy. And the friend will respond, oh, that's not funny. It's like, oh, I guess I'm not getting a follow from them. And that's okay. But it is interesting. It is real time feedback. And then on top of being an actor, I'm a dad, I'm a husband, but I'm heavily into health and wellness. I kind of recently have got into CrossFit in the last year, but I've always been, or in the last 6 years, I started biohacking and got into eating red meat, which I'd always been told was not good for me. I suppose I'm kind of you could say I'm an advocate for it. I'm certainly against vegans.
Oh, okay. We'll just agree on a few things just to start this off. What do you dislike about them? Tell me more.
It's nothing about their personal choices of what they want to eat. It's about them, how militaristic they are and their need to It's you know, it's funny when you take on a worldview that looks at other people as inhumane, isn't it? Like, it's funny when you just go, ah, you know, that's, you know, hitting, you know, smacking your children is inhumane. It's like, okay, so anybody who doesn't do what you do is like automatically below you. And vegans do that with the way that they eat. They go, anybody who eats meat is a lesser human being, is less empathic than me. And it's like, well, I mean, I think you should, you know, get off your high horse a little bit, maybe enter the end of the conversation. And also telling people what to eat, despite years and years of history of the way that people have eaten, I mean, there's a good argument that veganism is just racist.
Okay, so how did you get into caring about, you know, the way you work out and what you eat? When did, because you moved from Australia to the US in what year?
Oh, gosh. I've been here for 13 years now, so I'm not very good at maths. You're good at maths, aren't you? You're a doctor.
No, we just use calculators and algorithms, and we have electronic medical records, and we don't even really need doctors anymore. It's just like robo-medicine.
Right, right, yeah. Well, I moved here 13 years ago, and I was when I left high school, I got found to be a model. So I went to New York and I modeled there for a little while, and then I went did Europe and all that sort of thing. I always wanted to be an actor, and then I went back to Australia and started acting school. But so I was always into health and wellness, but health and wellness was always a vanity, you know. And in modeling, that's kind of the deal. I know that you do the beauty pageants and stuff like that. So health and wellness was always a vanity thing, but then eventually it became like, well,
what were models eating? Okay, I'm super interested. Like, when you were in the modeling world, are they all just anorexic? Like, that's what.
Yeah, I remember being told I was fat when I was 18, and I mean, and in fairness, I wasn't eating what I didn't know what I should have been eating. I didn't know that to be skinny was to be better in modeling. So I had to seriously shift. And then I just started eating a lot of vegetables.
Plant-based diet?
Essentially, I thought that vegetarianism was probably a good thing at the time because I didn't know any better. And yeah, I did get into the shape of being a model. I was quite a skinnier person. But then
with no muscle, like sarcopenic, right?
Yeah, there was definition, just, I think that was genetic, you know. I think it was like, I was like luck of the draw, good genes. Mm-hmm. And then when I started acting, it was like, you know, all of a sudden everything frees up. It doesn't really matter what you look like when you're an actor. I mean, it does, but it doesn't so much. When you model, all that matters is how you look. And so then I got to like kind of work out and feel good for me, not feel good and feel good for my head, not like worry about like eating so much and what I ate and what I didn't eat. And it kind of like allowed health and wellness to be more of a hobby than something that I had to do in order to be good looking. So like, where was this pressure, this vanity, which I really disliked. And now health and wellness is just something that I really enjoy.
So how did you get into like eating meat was healthy, reducing carbohydrates? Like, tell me how that transition happened.
It really started with Dave Asprey. He kind of came into the limelight. I guess it was saturated fat, and keto was a fad at the beginning. And I heard about him, and my ex-girlfriend started making me bulletproof coffees, the best thing about our relationship.
The bulletproof coffee.
Yes, you make it for me. And at first you're like, you're drinking butter and you're like, this is wrong, drinking butter. And then I was like, gosh, it makes me feel like a bloody unicorn. Yeah. And I've drunk that every morning for the last 6 years, and then got into the whole idea that, you know, red meat was good. Eat bacon and eggs. You know, maybe this is what your ancestors would have wanted for you. Maybe this is like the best fuel for your body. And then, yeah, so it was really Dave Asprey who kickstarted me on that route. And then through him, I met you, Ben Greenfield, and really started getting into biohacking. You know, I get outside naked all the time now.
Sunning the genitals, you guys. There's science.
Yeah, I'm one of those. I'm a sunning the genitals guy.
How many minutes per day do you subscribe to?
Well, it depends. You know, easily 10 minutes a day. I wear a hat, so it's not on the
on your head.
Yeah. Oh yeah, not on the balls.
Yeah.
Balls without
the genitals, fully exposed.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. No testicle hats.
Just what do the neighbors? What do the neighbors think of this?
Because I heard a guy talk about how like the skin on the face is more sensitive, so it doesn't need to be smashing it with sun. That everywhere else gets in the sun about 10 minutes a day, maybe 20. Yeah, I mean, where are you, Nebraska?
Yeah, yeah. We still have covered wagons, But when I'm not in my covered wagon, I try to get sunlight. I work as a doctor, so it's kind of hard. Like, I'm in the hospital, I'm in the clinic, but I think, based on research, 2 to 3 minutes of sunlight at sunrise and sunset, at least for your circadian rhythm, if you can get your eyeballs in the sun. Not all of us can sun our genitals. I don't, you know, if you live in an urban area, I guess it could be difficult. What does Kara think of your sunlight escapades?
Well, she doesn't mind it. I guess the issue is that, like, your testosterone goes so high that you can turn into a bit of a sex pest. To a wife who's just like, can you just relax? You
know, yeah, she has to beat you off with a stick.
We've already done it once this week. That's enough.
Well, you have a baby. We know how this ends up sometimes.
Exactly. You can have two. But here's my question about people who live in Nebraska, because I know how great morning sunlight is. I always love getting out in the sun, walking. I take my son for a walk first thing in the morning to get the sunlight in my eyes, set the circadian rhythm. What do you do if you're in Nebraska and it's not wintertime? What do you do?
So, well, first of all, you can do cold therapy and sunlight therapy at the same time. But not everybody's brave enough to do that. But the issue is that Nebraska, where we're at, the latitude we're at, you can go out and still get sunlight. But vitamin D production in general, just the angle of the sun and the latitude in which we live, you have to get longer exposure, and it's the winter. So I have just seen atrocious vitamin D levels recently. It seems that in Nebraska, vitamin D levels peak in about September and then go down through the winter months, which is, of course, when we see viral season. I mean, I had a patient recently with a vitamin D level of 17. I prefer most patients to run like 50 to 70 for a variety of reasons, health being one of them. But I mean, that's the real issue living in Nebraska or even Northern California, right? At that latitude, it becomes more difficult to get adequate sunlight.
So what do you tell them to do? I mean, obviously there's cod liver oil. I mean, that's what you do. You tell them to supplement.
Yeah. So, you can get UV light boxes. So UV gets such a bad rap, you know, right? Because of like, skin cancer risk and this and that and the other. But literally, I mean, some people can use tanning beds. You can get indoor UV light boxes. There's really only like one brand that's even making them right now. If anybody out there is an entrepreneur and wants to tap that market, I think it's like Spurdy or something. I have no financial affiliation with them, but there's just not many people making these types of devices. We see the red light devices, which are awesome, but we need all light. We need the whole spectrum of light. So not just the near red and infrared, which is awesome when you were talking about testosterone. I'm sure you've read Ben Greenfield's article about red light on the testicles and increasing testosterone. We of course had to get a red light, and I had to sit my husband in front of it and draw his testosterone levels just for science. This was just for science. And he did, his testosterone increased like 200 points. But so we'll need to repeat it with multiple subjects to confirm these results. But
UV light boxes, what are they? Do they actually give you a tan though? Like, it's actually like a tanning bed or a...
Well, they could, but really you're only using them for, you know, a few minutes of time, and it's only, you know, so many inches tall. It's not like you could go to a full tanning bed and then you're getting, I actually met a guy who, owns a ketogenic grocery store, and he built a new house, and he made this little cove in his house with, on one side he has a red light panel, on the other side he has a UV panel, and he just stands in there and then he like flips around after 5 minutes, and he does that daily, which I think is so cool. My husband and I built our house in 2016, and now that we're like really into this biohacking space, and I'm sure you feel the same way, I'm like, where can I put a sauna? Where can I put my cold plunge bath? Like, I could totally rebuild the house differently.
Have you got a cold plunge?
Not yet. I'm in the market. I'm looking.
I've been reaching out to Cold Plunge, that white bath.
Yes. Cold Plunge. Luke and I would like to participate in representing your company. Thank you.
Plunge will do anything you want. I have a question. I have a question, Vagina Doctor, because what does it mean for women to get out naked? Is there any research on getting your vagina out in the sun?
So not really. So a lot of the benefits with sunning the testicles is that the scrotal skin is really thin. And so the testicles, one of the cell that literally makes testosterone is called the Leydig cells. And the scrotal skin is really thin, and so it can absorb the light rays. But the ovaries are pretty deep inside the pelvis. And yeah, I mean, besides so the outside of it is called the vulva. And there's not really any benefit, you know, it's not any different than the other skin on your body, I guess, per se.
This is just my favorite subject of all time.
Yeah. But I mean, sunlight in general, the more skin you can have exposed, the better, you know, within legal bounds, per se. Okay. Okay. So tell us what your daily schedule is like with all your cool biohacking and red meat eating and working out.
You know, it's the biohacking's been pared back. I haven't gotten to the front of the red line in quite a while, but this is what I do every day. I wake up at around 7, get my son up, feed him breakfast, drink a big glass of water, and then I put him on in a little pack in the front of me, and I go for a walk up a hill or for about a half an hour walk, which is a really good amount of time. I never wear shoes, just generally, just because I don't ever have to leave the house to go to work.
You're completely barefoot on your walk?
Always, always completely barefoot. And
you don't ever wear like the barefoot shoes?
No, not barefoot shoes, just barefoot. And people around me, it's amazing how many people comment and think it's just absolutely incredible that I'm not wearing shoes, which maybe it's not good to run barefoot, but to walk, I feel like is really good. Sometimes I walk backwards. I'll usually do a walk in the morning with him and a walk in the afternoon, and I'll do that backwards up a hill because it's for my knee health. But anyway, the idea of getting out is he loves it, but number two, getting sun in the eyes for the circadian rhythm. Then I come home, and then I'll usually have a coffee. So that's about after an hour. And bulletproof, I'm getting into inositol right now, putting that in my coffee, which I'm absolutely loving. And I do feel my energy levels through the roof. I don't ever feel like a second coffee in the afternoon. Sometimes, and I never used to. I just feel down, and I'd feel like a coffee, but I wouldn't have one. Then I go about getting into my day, and then I usually, that's lifting heavy CrossFit type workout. I have a coach who sends me a workout every day. I'm lucky enough to have a gym here. I just couldn't work out in a mask when I came back to the States. I was like, I refuse to work out in a mask. It just felt completely wrong. And I've just been loving, I put on about 10 kilos in the last year just by eating more. I kind of have discovered that if you eat more, your body has more energy and you get bigger. Amazing. And that's steaks, like, you know, so I'll intermittent fast. I won't eat till lunch. And then when I do eat, I'll usually eat fruit before a workout. And then amino acids, creatine. Then I'll eat a big protein shake and a steak and eggs. And it's just been incredible watching, honestly, like just from a aesthetic standpoint, to watch my body grow and like go, actually, this is what you're supposed to look like a little bit more. Like this is maybe your natural body type.
Like if you were out on the plains of Australia, right, trying to chase down a kangaroo.
Yeah, chasing down kangaroo, wrestling crocodiles, and then eating that animal. This is what you should probably look like. But I've really enjoyed getting into nutrition. I work with a sports dietitian briefly. Her name is The Sports Dietitian on Instagram, and she's big into helping you perform at your best. It's not necessarily about aesthetics, and she's not into the keto thing. She's all about carbohydrate intake. And so I got into that, but then I was like, you know, I just don't feel like it's right for me eating all these carbs and thinking about macros and eating toast. And I was like, and so I stopped. Now I'm back on essentially a keto diet, but with a lot of fruit.
Yeah.
And yeah, that's my deal. And then my sleep, I've been getting into my sleep, taking chamomile serum before bed, taking theanine and magnesium 3 and 8, 45 minutes before bed, wearing red light glasses about an hour before bed. And my sleep is up, my deep sleep is up in 2 hours.
You track it. You track your sleep.
Aura, yeah. Yeah. And I was tracking it, and it was only an hour for the longest time. And it's just consistency. And that's what I'm realizing about fitness and diet and sleep. It's like consistency, consistently taking same, like, you know, similar things, going to bed at the same time, waking up at the same time. It just, deep sleep has jumped an hour. That's incredible. So like, and yeah, so consistency is something that I've really learned. But anyway, tell me about your morning routine, because you get up what looks like before the sun rises and go to the gym.
So real quickly, before I tell you my routine, do you think that all of this that you've done helps you be a better actor, human, husband? What is it? Like, what is it? What is better about this lifestyle as opposed to how you used to live?
1,000%. 1000% better. I mean, just doing yourself little favors like that, it's an act of self-love, you know, exercising, eating right, sleeping right, huge act of self-love. I mean, my battle will always be against my mood. That's my biggest battle in life. Will always be like, how am I going to wake up today? I'm going to be a bad mood or a good mood?
Yeah. What do you do when you're filming? Like, what is it like when are you like on set? Do you have to go to location for some of the projects you've done? Like, then what does it look like?
Oh yeah, absolutely. Well, that always gets trying to take care of yourself in those parameters, you know, where you maybe can't get an hour workout in or an hour and a half workout in the day, or eat perfectly because you can't make yourself the food. To try and do it within those parameters, that's when it kind of gets exciting. It's like, okay, so how can I eat what I know is good and yet it be a bunch of sandwiches? You know what I'm saying? Because it's what's mm-hmm. provided for you. And doing it within those parameters is kind of challenging and exciting. So I always bring my own snacks, number one, to set. So I'll bring liver chips. I'll bring hard-boiled eggs.
I was going to ask if you eat organ meats. Yeah. Or,
I mean, it doesn't taste good to me, but I know that it's great.
Give me three words that describe what liver tastes like.
It's cat food. There's only, I'm going to be giving you two. It's cat food.
I think it tastes like a dirty gym sock. Like every time I'm like, dirty gym sock. My husband just tastes like, he just tastes like the iron. Like he just thinks it's like more metallic. For a while we were swallowing raw liver. Just like, it was like a challenge. We're like, okay, let's. And every time I did it, I felt like I just drank 3 5-hour energy drinks. Like I felt amazing, but I do more desiccated now, or yeah, like carnivore crisps and things like that.
Carnivore crisps. Yeah. I was wondering what do you say to people when they ask, oh, but isn't the liver a filter? Aren't you then eating the toxins from this cow? Do you know what I'm saying? People ask that question.
Well, it's a filter in the sense that the liver is involved with all these I hate the word detox, like detoxification, you know, like you, it's involved in metabolism of everything we put in our body, but also all the substances our own body makes. So that estrogen that your ovaries and testicles make, like it goes through the same quote unquote detoxification pathways in the liver, but it doesn't store them. Like it just goes through the process and then everything gets excreted in the urine and the feces. So like if you're drinking urine, like that's a problem. Or if you're like eating poop, I don't know, I guess maybe that'd be good for the microbiome. Like there are things like fecal transplants, but eating liver, like the liver doesn't store it.
Yes, and furthermore, it's a cow's liver that's eaten grass its whole life. It's not like a human's liver who's been.
It's not slathering itself in cosmetics and chemicals and.
Exactly. Anyway, I bloody love liver, and I eat about a pack of those carnivore Aurelius liver crisps today. I love those.
He's hilarious, by the way.
I'm yet to have anything to do with him. He's emailed me a few times and I've heard from many people how funny he is.
Yeah. But my daily routine, I wake up, I used to wake up at 4:30. I've changed my workout routine a little bit. So now I actually quote unquote sleep in till like 5:30, but I typically wake up very early. And the first thing I do is my workout. So that's my kind of motto, pay yourself first, because I know if I get my workout in, I just tend to, I function better. Like I just do. Even if let's say I skip the workout and try to sleep in 2 more hours, total drag. Like just, I function better when I wake up and I get my workout in. And then, I'm usually off to the clinic or the hospital, rounding on patients, doing surgeries, looking at lots of vaginas. And then I eat my eating schedule. I start to get hungry around 11 o'clock. I a lot of times just fast till 11 o'clock. I'm not a coffee person, and it's mostly I just, hot drinks aren't my thing. When nitro coffee became a thing, I got into that, and I love a nitro coffee with some heavy cream in it. I will do MCT oil sometimes, but I usually don't eat till lunchtime, and I usually have meat, and I've experimented with whole food carbs off and on, but I eat a lot of red meat and a lot of eggs. I'll eat some wild-caught salmon when I can get, you know, hold of it in Nebraska because we don't live next to the ocean. So seafood can be sketchy, but I love shrimp too. Scallops. I'll eat chicken occasionally, but not very often. I've eaten so much chicken over my lifetime. I'm over it. And it's just
the most boring. But I have a question about when you get tired at work in the afternoon, what do you do?
Well, I for a while was experimenting with exogenous ketones. And I do think that that can make a huge difference. Like if you start to get like boredom, craving, tired, kind of hungry feelings, I think exogenous ketones are awesome. I'm not opposed to eating some carnivore crisps at my desk, but tired. I don't know. I use some caffeine, but I don't find that I hit that slump anymore. I used to, when I was eating a lot of carbohydrates, I used to hit that 2 o'clock slump, and I definitely at like 7, 8 o'clock at night, once my kids went to bed, I was like a corpse crawling across the floor. And I thought that's what life was like when you have, cause I've got 3 kids and you'll soon find out there's no way you're not only, you have to have more than one baby. Your baby is like a clone of your wife and your wife is beautiful. So this little boy is going to like, yeah, he's going to need an agent very quickly.
That's what we're trying to do. We're trying to create an entire family of hotties. That's all we care about. As long as they're looking, they don't have to be nice.
But I just feel, I feel in function, I'm a better doctor, I feel like an optimal human. Yes. Amen.
It's a great bloody feeling, isn't it? When you get in control like that. And I do, and another thing that I've found, just consistency, like a week of eating well, you just feel the difference. Like when you can look back on your entire week and go, you know what, I haven't been an idiot this week, you know, eating a cookie at night or something like that. I've been really like good and keeping with like it, you know, eating to my truth or something. But it feels so great. And I think it's annoying to hear, if you're an unhealthy person and you want to get healthy, it's kind of annoying to hear that consistency is key, because it's like, oh, it means hard work over time. It means not a 30-day blast. It means like, oh, for the rest of my life, I have to be consistent to this thing. But yeah, it is like, strangely, after years and years of being healthy, or at least working to be healthy, consistency is just so much a part of it that I never got to experience, that I now experience, and I go, wow, just keep consistent at it and your life will change.
Do you ever just slide off the rails and like eat some pizza and whatever?
Weekends, I tend to be, if I'm going to do it, it's going to be on the weekend. And I do love pizza. I love cheese, not raw cheese, cooked cheese only. I don't know. I just can't eat raw cheese. Never have been able to. Burgers. But I see, whenever I do that, I still try and like, a grass-fed burger, like, it gives me joy. There used to be a place here called Bel Campo. I used to love eating that stuff, and I would not feel bad about it at all. And that was so fun, where you get your naughtiness in. It's also good for you.
What's it like being an actor in LA and living this way? Are people just annoyed with you? This isn't the norm out there.
It's strange in LA because, okay, people are healthy and running around and like drinking juices and stuff like that. But when it comes to the minutiae of like health, like I could talk about it all day. And I think if you're going to piss somebody off, tell them how to be healthier, and not be a doctor. People hate it. People really, really hate it. You're a doctor, so it's okay. You can tell. But if I was like, like eating that toast, like your insulin's going to, you know, and they're like, shut up. It's like being a vegan. That's what being a vegan is. He's like telling people what to do all the time. Going, yeah, I don't know about that. Should we do that? Is that good for the earth? You know, it's like that. But yeah, if you're going to upset people, it's by telling them how to be healthy.
Yeah, just the dogma associated with it. I mean, from my perspective, show me your numbers. If you have great metabolic markers and you're a happy, healthy, thriving human being, I don't care what you're eating. But I just know, as a clinician, looking at labs and things like that, have you had your labs checked? Like,
I had labs checked about 2 years ago. It's been a while. I have a great doctor here who I can go to and do that stuff. But you know, while I feel like I'm so energetic and feel like I'm thriving, I don't feel the need to go to it. But I'd like to go sometime soon. I've told him I will. I want to know one thing. What's the worst thing that you can eat for your vagina?
Let's see. I mean, food doesn't travel to the vagina, I guess, unless you put it in there per se. But hyperglycemia, like diabetic patients have increased risk of like yeast. I mean, things that could mess up the vaginal microbiome. And there's people out there listening that are going to say like, your diet has nothing to do with the vaginal microbiome. But like the reality is that what we're going to find out in the next 10, 15, 20 years is that bacteria and viruses probably are bigger determinants of our health than we realize. Like we're finding out that there is a microbiome within the uterus and like within the endometrial lining and within the placenta. And because we've never been able to figure out how women even go into labor, like what causes preterm birth. But now we're starting to see that when there's perturbations, like in the vaginal microbiome, women are at risk of these things. And so the bacteria that are supposed to be in the vagina predominantly are lactobacillus, and they eat this glycogen, this glycocalyx that actually produces lactic acid. So the vagina is actually very acidic. So different parts of your body have different pH levels. And the vagina does a pretty good job of being a self-cleansing organ, creating that acid. It keeps all the bad bacteria at bay. But from a health perspective, there's not particularly a food that would cause problems in the vagina, but just nutrition in general. And like your overall metabolic health is probably more important, I would say.
And then have you ever, you know, have you ever dealt with a vagina that when you saw it, you were just amazed?
There's this meme going around Instagram that said something like, gynecologists look at the pelvic floor and they're like, damn, this girl's fit. And I am telling you, I got 350 DMs about this thing, like instantaneously. And women were like, but is it true? And I would just send a laugh face back to all of them. And they were like, no, tell us right now. But
the idea would be like, if like you can, a gynecologist could be able to feel a strong pelvic floor and then you could tell if someone's fit.
Right. It's like, if I look at Luke Cook's bicep, it might look strong, but I don't know how strong it is unless I ask him to flex and I feel it, or I give him a weight and see how much it can hold. Visually, when you look at, if you're doing a pelvic exam, we can't even see the vagina or the pelvic floor because the vulva is in the way. The vulva is the labia and the clitoris and all the things that are on the outside. So first of all, that has nothing to do with the strength of the pelvic floor. So that's okay. The first thing that people need to hear, but the vulva is like your face. Like the sides might not be equal. Everybody's face looks different. You might have a beard. You might have no beard. Like they all come in every shape and size, but it would be very subjective for me to look and say like, this is a really pretty vulva. That's very subjective.
Yes. Yes. But I'm asking, you know, in your subjectivity, have you ever seen a vagina that you're like, wow?
Yeah. I mean, they're right. There would have to be like a top 10.
Yeah. And
there's no plaques. There's no like plaques on the walls in my office or anything like that. But
I've seen those artworks. Have you seen those artworks where it's like, it's a plaster of like 20 different, 30 different women's vagina, you know, their vulvas.
Totally. And I just on Thanksgiving, I don't know which Instagram it is. I wish I could tell you all to go look at it right now, but there's a lady that owns a bakery. I want to say it was in New York, but she's an artist of some kind, but she bakes pies and the tops of the pies are all different vulvas. And it's her way of spreading education about women's vulvas.
I'm all about that education because I feel like it is damaging. And I know, like, for instance, like pornography has damaged a lot of people's ideas of what's normal. And there's really no normal, is there?
Right, right. And I love how you use this Louise character to bring education to the social media world. Where did you come up with this idea?
Well, you know, so for anyone out there who doesn't know, I do this character named Louise Higginbotham, who's a typical Australian housewife. And it's based on my mom. And, you know, the thing about...
Wait, you're making fun of your own mom. That's what you're doing?
Yes. But despite her being a lovely conservative Christian woman, she's and very polite, there is no taboo subject. You know, there's nothing you can say that will shock her. She's heard it all before, darling. She's seen it all before. And so when it comes to talking about sex, she's more than happy to to like overshare or whatever. Okay, so for instance, when one day my mum came home from the shops from like, you know, Coles, which is like Whole Foods or whatever here.
Coles.
Ralph's.
Does she live in California?
No.
She's back home in Australia.
Yeah, Coles is spelled differently. It's in Australia. She came.
I was like, they have Coles in Australia.
No, not K. It's C-O-L-E-S. But anyway, she came home and my best mate was over. We were like 17. And so she's putting all the shopping up on the bench in order to put it away. And she plonks down this large bottle of lubricant. And my friend looks at it and taps me. And I'm like, And I go to mom and I go, mom, could you put the lubricant away? And she goes, well, she goes, that's life, darling. And that's my mum. It's just like, nah, we're not, it's okay. This is, we have sex. It's true. We're in our 60s and we still do it.
Did you ever walk in on your parents having sex?
No.
There was hesitation there.
Yeah, no, well, I really had to think about it because
did your therapist tell you to block it out of your memory or what?
My brother has. And so I've heard stories from him. And so I'm, and you know, when it gets in there and you kind of think, is that my story? Or is that somebody else's story?
Okay. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Anyway, it's not funny and it's not to be talked about.
It's like when you wake up from a dream and you're like, wait, did that really happen?
Exactly. But they caught me once. It was dreadful.
Oh, that's even better. Every mother's dream.
We shouldn't even be talking about it, but my mom crying was just the worst thing that ever.
I thought she had seen everything.
Yeah, she's seen everything, but you know, my parents are Christian, my dad is a minister, and the woman was not my wife. She was a girlfriend. So we shouldn't have been doing it, and we got caught, and it was one of the worst days of my life. It was so awful. And like coming downstairs and like, I didn't know they were home. Why am I telling this story on a public podcast?
It's like making you real and authentic,
but we have nowhere to go but up right now.
Yeah, let me tell it because it's probably good to therapize about this because, okay, so they're at church, right? They're at church, it's a Sunday morning. And you know, me and my girlfriend not allowed to sleep in the same room. So we come together and like my parents are gone for a couple of hours. And the stupidness of me, I put on music so I don't hear them come home.
Like a slow jam?
Yeah, slow jams. Yeah, exactly. And Boyz II Men, more specifically. Mm. And my dad walks
past. Good album. Really good album.
And my dad walks past the room and must have just briefly seen. And I think went downstairs to my mom and said, you're not going upstairs. And
that's like saying, don't look.
Then like the music stops somehow, it's like, you know, the change of song, and I hear my mom's whistle or something. I just hear that they're home, and I'm like, well, where are they? Are they downstairs? Have they come up yet? And my dad has already been up there, and I come down, and I'm red-faced, and my dad just is speechless, looks at me, and I know what he's seen, and and then we had the most awkward lunch in the whole ever had. And my mom broke down over lunch. And we've never talked about it since. So that's why it's so such therapy.
Until this Christmas, it's going to get talked about. I heard that podcast you're on with that vagina doctor.
Anyway, it feels good to be married now and in a relationship that they're happy with me. And now I can now be I can now be sex positive. And like, you know, talk about sex openly and like.
How did you meet Kara? So for those of you that don't know, he's married to a very beautiful woman, Kara Wilson. She's a stylist, is that right?
So yeah, she dresses a few celebrities. She dresses Lindsay Bond.
Oh, like that. Yeah.
In Nebraska, so you might know. Me and Kara met. Her best friend used to come to my fitness class. I used to be a trainer back in the day. Before I made it in acting, and her best friend used to come to my class, and then we became friends. I added her on Instagram. I saw Kara on her stories and was like, who is that? She set me up on a date with Kara. We went on the date. I had no idea Kara was Australian, and then we found out on that date. It was immediate. I was like, I want to marry this woman as soon as we sat down. And Kara found out she was Australian. Not only that, we grew up 2 minutes from each other.
No way.
And so we met in America, even though we grew up 2 minutes from each other in this very small, like unknown suburb in Sydney. But it was very immediate. And I knew like I had to impregnate this woman.
Okay. So you married her.
Yes, I did. Yeah.
Then you got her pregnant. How did you get her pregnant? I don't understand how that works.
So that's sex. But actually, oh. No, I, you know, we found out that she was pregnant. We were engaged. Then we went home when she was pregnant, went back to Australia during 2020. Great time to be in Australia. And we got.
Did you get stuck there? They weren't letting people out, right?
That was this year. Australia was in 2021. 2020 was easy. So we went back home and we got married there with like, you know, only 10 people there. We got married for zero money. And it was beautiful. And then we had Chaplin in November 2020. And then we've come back here now. And it's been a whirlwind and a joy. As you know, kids are a whirlwind, right? It's like, you can't even believe that you actually have them.
It's crazy, like, that your wife, like, made that human inside of her body. Does Kara eat the same way as you?
Yes. That was one thing that, like, when we got together, she was having gut issues. I think she had a leaky gut. And then I started, you know, and she was only eating fish some couple of times a week, mostly vegetarian diet. And I was like, nah, we're eating steak now. You're going to eat like me. And that healed her gut. And she started putting on weight, which if you'd seen her at the beginning, it was a good thing. And then got her period back. And then we got pregnant.
So you made her start eating red meat and then you accidentally got her pregnant.
Mm. Well, that was not an accident. It was like, if it happens, it happens. If it doesn't, it doesn't. But it was so, when it happened, I was so excited and happy. It happened to be the worst, like, it was like a very overcast, awful day in LA and COVID was coming in. You know, COVID was like the talk of the town. It was like, is this going to shut down the world?
Yeah.
And it was, the California government announced that day we're shutting down for 2 weeks. 2 weeks to slow the spread. Remember how cute?
March, yeah.
Beginning of that day, Kara comes home, she tells me she's pregnant. And I just remember being so excited and not, but it was very interesting looking out at the world and going, oh, you're going to have kids in this environment? What does that mean?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay, without oversharing, if Kara doesn't want you to overshare, but talk to me about the birth of your child. Like, had you ever seen a baby born before? Like,
I'd seen videos on YouTube and things like that. It was a C-section. The baby wouldn't turn, which was upsetting to Kara. She really wanted to go the natural route. But in the end, we had a C-section. And it was such a fascinating day. I remember being more nervous than she was. And then coming in and seeing her naked laying on a table with, like, drawings on her big belly. And she looks at me and come and I hug her. And then they put a divider up between us. And the two doctors are sitting there. And they're on the other side of the divider. I could hear them talking and they're talking about not things that anything to do with what they're doing. who are you banking with? That's what they were talking about. And so they were talking about absolutely nothing. And I'm just hugging Kara and kissing her. And we get to play our own music over there. So we played Cigarettes After Sex, which is what he was conceived to, we think. Great band. That band is just for having sex too, by the way. If you need love making music, that's great stuff.
The 2021 Boys to Men, you guys.
and then we were kissing. And then all of a sudden, within 5 minutes, the doctor just goes, I think you got a friend here to see ya. And he looks up Chaplin over the thing. And then, waterworks. I couldn't believe it. Because I actually, even though I'm an actor who's kind of in touch with his emotions, to just be able to, I couldn't believe it. I just cried immediately. I was just like, bam. And it was such a special moment. I was the first, they plonked him down on Kara briefly. Then they wrapped him. I took him. They weighed him. I cut the cord. And I just remember being blown away that this little thing was now here. And I remember thinking he was so cute. And then you look back at pictures and you're like, no, he wasn't cute. He's cute now. But I remember thinking how beautiful he was. He was not.
It's like, it's like vaginas. Like, there's a spectrum. I mean, there are really cute babies. There are really cute newborn babies. But I mean, they all look a little squishy and, you know, some of them are really hairy. Like, they get that.
Do you deliver babies?
Yes. And I do this C-section that you speak of. Like, that's like what I do for a living. Yeah. I do C-sections. I do surgeries, like hysterectomies, deliver babies, all of that.
And then, you know, I mean, I suppose it's similar, like with looking at a vagina and looking at a newborn baby. Do you ever have to politely smile and just go, okay.
You mean like if they're not cute? Yeah, I mean, I'm very professional in my job. Yeah.
And then next question, have you ever, this might be rude, but I mean, have you ever smelt one, like a vagina, and be like?
Well, actually, the five senses, we use all five senses as a doctor. Like if you have a wound, we smell it. But the vagina, because we talked about the normal bacteria, the lactobacillus, and if the pH of the vagina starts to rise, you can get a condition called bacterial vaginosis, which is where you start to see a change in the microbiome. Gardnerella tends to be the bacteria that will sometimes predominate, but there's other bacteria, atobium and a few others, but it will start to have more of an, it will start to have more of an amine odor. So like more of like a fishy odor, but like I want every, since we're talking about sex positivity, the vagina always has a smell to it. Like I think that as a society, we think women are like dirty. If you walk down the aisle at Target, it's like, cause I have three daughters. So I'm really like passionate about this. Like there's 9,000 products that are like vaginal washes, vaginal wipes, vaginal shampoos, moisturizers, lubricants, like scented tampons, like all this craziness. And like I said earlier, the vagina is a self-cleansing organ, but like it has bacteria, just like your skin, like just like you smell when you come home from the gym, you know, the vagina has a normal smell to it. And that is, I mean, you can sometimes when people get like a very like flourishing bacterial vaginosis, like you can smell it before you even do the exam. Like sometimes, and I'm not saying this like in any degrading like way, but like sometimes you can smell it just walking into a small clinical room.
Right. Which is, you know, it's actually just letting you know, isn't it? It's just,
Yeah. I mean, it's part of the, it's not like, there's not anything weird about it. Like people get vaginal infections, like men get infections in their penises. Like it's just like, it's part of the world.
And then Gardnerella, like, would that be like, if there's a vine, would it be a vine coming out of the vagina?
What would it look like? No, it tends to, so like the, there, so the criteria for diagnosis of bacterial vaginosis is an amine odor. You can also test the pH. So we can take a Q-tip swab the vagina and put it on pH paper. And we can actually see what the pH is because the pH is supposed to be very acidic. We can look at it underneath a microscope and we can actually see these little bacteria kind of clumping on the squamous cells of the vagina when we take this little swab. So we can look at it under a microscope. Visually, sometimes it will look like just a very thin gray discharge. Like discharge is completely normal, right? I said that for women, like the there's cervical mucus, there's lubricating glands at the opening of the vagina. So every woman is making discharge and it changes. If you're a menstruating woman, it changes throughout the menstrual cycle based on if your body wants to let sperm swim through the cervix or not. So it gets really watery around the time of ovulation so the sperm can swim through. And then after that, then it thickens and makes kind of this cervical mucus plug so that they can't get in there. So every day of the cycle, the discharge will look different. But if it's infectious in nature, it tends to be like thin and gray or sometimes green. Trichomonas will look green. Yeast will look like thick, you know, chunky and white. So yeah, this is all part of the diagnosis.
Amazing. Now, okay, this is a great question, but I don't know if you'll be able to answer it. Squirting. Is that pee?
Well, it could be, but there are glands at the opening of the vagina. So the Bartholin glands are at the bottom, and then you have these glands called the Skene's glands, which sit right next to the urethra. And there are women who can, I mean, these are lubricating glands. They contract and they put lubrication at the opening of the vagina during sexual arousal. So like it is a thing. It could be urine. I mean, that's the thing is like you have different orifices, but no, it is a thing. Obviously it is normal if you don't, but you should have adequate lubrication with sexual arousal. But obviously male and female parts are different. Like ejaculation is obviously visually easier to assess.
Yeah, sure. I've always found squirting really incredible. I mean, it's a phenomena. But I've never noticed that. I mean, it would make sense that it could be pee, but it never smells like it. So it's like, okay, well, it's fair to assess that it's not pee.
Right. No, there is definitely glands that with sexual arousal, orgasm, will secrete a bunch of fluid into the vagina. It's trying to create an environment that sperm can swim through.
Yeah. And do as a gynecologist, do you ever have to do, because I know you're not a sex doctor necessarily, so do women come to you when they are unable to orgasm just in general?
Yeah. No, and I've got, I just recorded actually a great podcast with another doctor on this exact topic. We talk about sexual arousal, hypoactive sexual desire disorder. It's rare to see a disorder. I believe that every woman with an intact neurologic system has the ability to orgasm. So that's more rare. I would say the one that we see most commonly is hypoactive sexual desire disorder, but I don't think it's as, I think it's more of a societal issue than it is an actual pathological issue for most women. I think it's that we're burnt out. Moms are stressed. they can't get into a state where they want to be aroused. So the fact that most people need to hear, and they'll hear me talk about it on this other podcast, really only about 10% of women have spontaneous desire. Like they walk in the kitchen and they're like, oh, I want to have sex. Most women need arousal first to have desire. And that's different than men. Most men have spontaneous desire. And so a lot of times for these, in these situations, it's, there's just an imbalance in the dynamics of the couple, or they're overstressed. They're not allowing themselves an opportunity to get into a mindset or a mind frame where, you know, they're receptive to that. We always think of our brain, like there's an excitatory and an inhibitory, and the excitatory is like the gas pedal and the inhibitory is like the brake pedal. And most women are stronger in the inhibitory pathway, and most men are stronger in the excitatory pathway. And so it's just, that's just how we're just different creatures.
It's entirely possible that a woman might think that she does, that she might have a problem with her desire when really she's just comparing herself to a man who's always ready to go, like who's often ready to go, right?
Right. Or just the societal, like, I mean, the societal expectations, like you should be having sex all the time. And if you don't, then there's something wrong with you. Or, you know, there's no, a healthy sexual relationship looks a lot of different ways, you know, and some people aren't in relationships. We know that orgasms for women, so the difference between the sex organs of, in women, the clitoris is the organ that is, it's the only organ that's purely for pleasure. It has zero to do with reproduction. But most women need clitoral stimulation for orgasm. And we know in women, the more orgasms you have, there's actually increased longevity. So if you want to talk about biohacking, I mean, yes, like women should be having orgasms, whether it's by themselves or with a partner. But this idea that sexual satisfaction in a relationship is just penetrative intercourse is kind of like the stigma we have to break. Like it's not, there's no like awards to be won. Like, are you both happy? Like, there's probably some men out there that, you know, don't care if it's only once a month or whatever it is. Like every couple's different.
And I think that's also a damaging idea too, is that men are always hypersexual and always wanting to have sex. And mm-hmm. there are men out there who are like, just can't relate to that and kind of feel a little bit like, oh, what's wrong with me? And it's like, well, you just have a lower sex drive or for whatever reason, whether it be psychological or physical. And that's okay too. You know, I feel like there's an extra layer of pressure laid on men because they're always expected to be sexual. But I'm interested in the idea that of like what an orgasm for a woman does via like what it does for a man. Like I know that ejaculating for a man is something that I do, is like not ejaculate every time I have sex in order to hold on to my energy. And is it similar for women? Do orgasms tire them? Do they exhaust them, or are they energize?
No. So for men, we see this surge of testosterone, and then a lot of the testosterone gets aromatized into estrogen. You do get some oxytocin, but you also get prolactin. So for men, it's like, whoosh, like you have this big crash. For women, actually, it's much more invigorating. But the, you know, with orgasm, you see an increase in oxytocin, which is like our social bonding, like hormone. And so it's what tries to like bond you to your mate, essentially.
So, but do you think that's energizing, or do you think it's exhausting, or like, cause for me, or for, I know that for most men after ejaculation, you get tired, you know, maybe you want to have sleep.
Yeah. I think it's similar. Like, I don't think that after orgasm, and I guess I'm mostly speaking out of personal experience now. It's not like I'm like, oh, let's go like, do something crazy. Like, let's go for a 26-mile run. No, I mean, I think that that oxytocin feeling, like, I think for most people, it's, for even women, it's just like the cuddly, like, you know, post-orgasmic state.
Right. I read a book called Bonk once. It was really good. And I remember like one of the things I were talking about was women who, they found that women were more likely to orgasm depended on their, the if their clitoris was closer to their vagina or if it was further away.
Yeah. So most women don't orgasm with penetrative intercourse, and that is right. It's probably anatomically because they're getting stimulation just anatomically how they are built. But for some people, it might be further away. There might be a lot of space between the what we call the vaginal introitus, the opening. Also, the labia are part of arousal. So like the lips, like the inside, the menorah and the majora, actually the clitoris is not just like this tiny dot. It extends down the front of the vagina. It's actually quite large. It's actually a couple centimeters in length. And then the legs of it extend down the labia. So you get arousal in all of those areas. And that's probably where those women can, but most can't. Most women cannot orgasm just from penetrative intercourse without additional clitoral stimulation.
Yeah, I mean, thinking about labia legs, is that what you're just talking about?
No, the clitoris has legs. It has a body. They're called crura. So basically every male anatomical part, this will blow some people's minds. Every baby starts as a female. If there's presence of the Y chromosome, then those parts turn into a testicle and scrotum and a penis. But basically there's an analogous part for every female and male part. So like the glands of the penis is similar to the clitoris. Like the difference is that, like I said, men ejaculate and pee through the same hole, and that's not true for women.
Right, right. Well, this leads me to a funny little area. have you dealt with intersex people?
Yes, interesting thing that just happened. Mrs. America is intersex. She's married. She has a child that that she used a surrogate for. But it is a thing. So a variety of things. So a male fetus could be born with something called androgen insensitivity. Actually, there's Jamie Lee Curtis was born with this condition. So this is just my assumption, but probably the same thing that Mrs. America had. But basically, they don't have the receptor for the testosterone, so they never masculinize. They never get the male features, but they don't have a uterus. They just have basically a vagina and then nothing, at the top of it. Intersex is a thing. We can see sex chromosome abnormalities. I've delivered babies that have XXY chromosomes, XYY, XO, what we call XO, that's Turner syndrome. So they only got one sex chromosome and they missed the second one. So yeah, that's where sometimes you can have babies that have what we call intersex, but it all depends on which part of the genetics they got dealt.
And is it more common than we might think?
No, it's still rare. I mean, it's still rare, but obviously now with, transgender being more of an open thing, it all just depends on what chromosomes you were born with and what parts you have. So, we can build penises surgically. We can make, neo vaginas. It's pretty amazing. There's some talented surgeons out there that can do these things for sure.
Yeah, right. That's not your field though, is it?
It's a very specialized field. So I do pelvic floor surgery, like for prolapse or incontinence, but I don't do any sort of, sex assignment surgery. And it's hard. There's not many places. A lot of times people will go to other countries to have it done, which is of course like really dangerous. Like you want to make sure that these people know what they're doing, but.
Yeah, totally. Well, how many times, speaking of the pelvic floor, how many times a day or how frequently should the average woman or man actually, because I mean, I think we all have Kegels and pelvic floor muscles. Mm.
Yes. Yes. So the pelvic floor in men and women, there are muscles and connective tissue. And obviously women birth babies through their pelvic floor. So it tends to become more of an issue over our lifetime, increases our risk of incontinence. That's why I told everybody to go empty their bladder before this episode. And now we're not laughing enough, but there's more. So there's, when you have problems with prolapse, it could be an actual issue with the vagina, right? As we age, we don't make collagen. When we lose our estrogen after menopause, we can have a thinning of the vaginal tissue, but we have this pelvic floor, the connective tissue and the muscles. And just like your biceps, it's like use it or lose it. And so you have to understand how to contract it, not only how to contract it, but how to relax it. And your pelvic floor is very much connected to your core, which is, you know, you have your diaphragm on the top, you've got your core in the front, your back muscles in the back, and your pelvic floor in the bottom. And so like, think of it like this cube, like this box. And as one pushes, you know, it pushes on the other one. And so the pelvic floor is extremely important, especially after childbirth. Even if your wife had a C-section, so Kara just carrying Chaplin on her pelvic floor, just the pregnancy of it, we know with ultrasound and MRI, there's changes that happen in that connective tissue.
Kara's got into Pilates, which she's found really helpful.
And that's awesome for your core and breath work and breathing. And
yeah, absolutely. Her C-section scar, she says, still gives her pain. It's still sensitive.
Yeah. So you can do a lot of like lymphatic massage. So the problem is that when we cut through the skin and then we cut through the deeper layers of the abdomen, so there's something called the fascia, which is the tight fibrous layer where the muscles insert. And then when we go through all these layers, unfortunately that C-section scar can like anchor down to those lower layers, and we disrupt little nerve endings and blood vessels, but lymphatics too. And so doing like lymphatic massage around the scar can be helpful. Yeah, but that is something that can occur. People can get hypersensitivity, or they can get completely like numbness around it as well.
Yeah. Now I'm going to shift. I don't know if you figured this out yet. You're more interesting than me. I knew this coming into the interview. I was like, oh, I'm going to ask her so many questions. I'm not going to be able to get one in with me.
You guys, when I asked Luke if he would come on my podcast, he goes, sure, but I'm interviewing you.
It is much more interesting. So my question is about your Mrs. Nebraska the contests. What do you do pre-bikini walk, like in order to like get in like tip-top shape?
So I had never done a pageant ever. So when I ran for Mrs. Nebraska, I was really trying to break down some personal beliefs and barriers that I had for myself, and also trying to show other women of the world that you can be muscular and you can be smart, you can be a doctor and still be a beauty queen. The misses, so this was a big misconception on social media. So there's, so Mrs. America, I was not running for Miss America, that's unmarried people, or the Miss USA pageant just happened. Those are unmarried women. But you know, for married women, they weight it 50% in interview. So it's 50% interview, 25% swimsuit, 25% evening gown. So, you know, I thought that was nice that they care that you're smart and articulate and whatnot. But no, it was one of the most terrifying things to think about, putting on 5 3/4 inch heels and a swimsuit and walking on a stage full of people after you've, you know, had 3 children. Like, your body confidence is certainly just not as high. But I had a coach. I literally had a coach. I was already lifting weights in the gym, but he just helped me with my diet, just getting to a level of leanness that I felt good and I looked healthy. That was really important to me. Confidence really starts on the inside though. You know what I mean? Like, there's nothing sexier than a woman who doesn't care what anybody thinks about her body. Like, and that's
things like, you know, water intake. Like, yeah. I'm talking 24 hours out to a bikini walk.
So if you're doing like bodybuilding, like bikini shows, there is definitely like a manipulation level of dehydration that occurs to try to like thin out the skin and really like make the muscles pop. With beauty pageants, it's not quite as extreme, but I did kind of take a similar approach. Like, I, the day of the show, I wasn't like chugging, guzzling water. Well, first of all, you don't want to have to pee on stage, but just small sips of water. And I was actually eating keto brick. So if you've never heard of that, it's like this just perfect keto macronutrients. So it's like 20% protein, 70% fat, and a few carbs. So all I did was eat these like small little pieces of keto brick throughout the day, until I was off stage. And then once Mrs. America was done, I went and had a little pizza, cause I hadn't had any in like 4 months. But when you're going to be on a stage in front of the entire world, that's what you do. Like, do you ever prep for jobs? Like, what is that? I mean, cause we've seen actors that have done like extreme things to get ready for a role.
I was told a couple of weeks out from when I was shooting Sabrina that I was going to be naked in a scene. And then when, you know, I'm always working out. So it's never really a huge shift. I was just like, okay, kick it into gear and really eat nothing bad at all. And then about 24 hours out, I started paring back water, not eating so much water. And then the day of, not having like very few, like any water at all, really. And then thick carbohydrates. So like bread or muffins, like something that's like dry.
Yeah.
And that was just via what I read online. I didn't really know anything about what it was doing.
That's like traditional bodybuilder, like people that are eating like chicken and rice, they like deplete the carbs and then add them back to fill the glycogen in the muscles.
Yeah, and then I tell you this, like if you ever have to say lines or remember things, don't bloody do the water thing.
I don't it affects your water. Cognition, huh?
Yeah, it absolutely does. So I've actually done it 3 or 4 times, and one of them I had big monologues and I kept tripping up and I was like, it's because you're dehydrated, you idiot. Like, mm-hmm. So then that was a good learning. Like if you have to look good, you don't have to speak or think, you know, don't drink the water. But if you have to think and speak, drink bloody water.
Okay, tell us about lovemaking scenes in movies. Are you like legitly naked, or like you got like a sock on, or things like taped? Like
lovemaking, they'll always have you know, a cup or a sock or something that gets, you know,
a cup or a sock. Those are not the same item.
I've done a few of them, and they're never sexually enjoyable for me. I always feel like, wow, you're surrounded by 30 people. And you've got this person, and you know, even if they're really sexy, it's what Denzel Washington said. It's like, sorry if I do, sorry if I don't, but about getting a hard on. But I generally never have. I just find it very unsexy, the whole thing.
Yeah.
It's about making it look sexy and making it look comfortable, of which like you're trying to make the uncomfortable look really comfortable. We were talking about 25 to 30 to 40 people in a room with you filming, making sure everything's fine. And you're like, you know, like a passionate moment, and it's just unhot.
Is that like, out of all the scenes you have to do, is that like the one that really challenges you as an actor the most? Or is there something that's worse than that?
No, I like, even though it's uncomfortable generally, I really find it fun. Like it's enjoyable. It's just not sexually enjoyable. It's not like when I have to tell Kara that I have to go and do this scene, she's like, oh, and I'm like, you think that it's this, but it's not. Like, it's not a sexy thing for me. And I find it fun. No, I find that the hardest scenes to do are the ones that the acting is difficult. Sex is easy.
Well, tell me what you mean by that. Like, what's difficult? Like, what's the hardest scene you've ever had to do?
Gay scenes. Gay scenes are hard. Like, you know, I've done a gay scene with, I've done it.
Because you're not gay, or because?
Yeah. Well, it depends. Like, so I do it with.
So you can't like mentally like get into the.
A few different gay scenes but mostly with other straight men. And so you kind of got to talk. You kind of got to figure out like how, like if you really wanted to F each other, how you'd want to do that, even though you really don't want to do that.
So you didn't apply to be in Brokeback Mountain?
I was like 15, but I at the time, but I remember
that would have gotten really awkward.
Yeah, I was just doing a scene like with a guy, and he had to like grab me and bend me over. We didn't end up having sex or anything, and I just remember like kind of, you know, pretending to want it. And so like he's bending me over a basin, and I'm like and in rehearsals we just cracked up a few times, because it was like just the last thing that either of us want to be doing. But still, I think it's good for the soul. It's just if you can take yourself not so seriously. A lot of straight actors will be like, no, absolutely not doing that.
And it's like I'm too good for that.
Relax. Like I've had to make out with guys, and it's like, and in the end, like if you like the fella, like he's a good guy, it's funny.
That's awesome. That's awesome.
But it's a joy. Like, it's still fun.
Do you joke around? Like you're trying to do a sex scene. Do you try to like lighten the mood? Like make jokes?
Dark subject matter. Like, you know, like I commit suicide in a movie. And that's the time when it's like the mood needs to lighten, because the entire set can come down and get really heavy. And so you need to like tell a joke. And like, that's the time that you want to go and have fun, rather than get heavy and down. So even when, you always want to be joking and joke more when it's serious, when it's too serious. Because really, in the end, it's play. Like, we all forget that, you know, we're all like, oh, acting in movies. It's like, wow, this is serious. It's like, no, mate, this is a joke. It's a play. It's a bit of fun. It's dress ups. It's time to have fun.
Who's your dream co-star, man or woman?
Will Ferrell or Jim Carrey or Ricky Gervais.
Okay. Those are both really good. Those are both. Will Ferrell. I'm a huge fan of Will Ferrell.
Legend. Yeah. True legend.
Like during my childhood, he had some big movies like that were, my husband could like, he's like the movie quote guy. You know what I mean? He could quote a lot of Will Ferrell lines for sure.
I saw a meme that was like, before memes, it was just men sitting around a fire quoting Anchorman.
Totally. Our first dog, this is how obsessed we might have been. Our first dog was Baxter. Totally from Anchorman. And he would always be like, did you eat a whole wheel of cheese from the refrigerator? All the time.
Well, it's been a joy talking to you. Thanks for like hearing my questions about vaginas.
Yeah, this is so wonderful. Okay, tell people where to find your social media if they're living under a rock.
Great. My name, my handle on Instagram and TikTok is TheLukeCook.
With a blue check.
Not on TikTok.
Oh, not on TikTok, but on Instagram.
Yeah. On Instagram, yeah, there's a blue check.
There's a lot of posers out there. I just had to report a fake Instagram account. Somebody was stealing my pictures this morning. It's so annoying.
But they're kind of fun, though. They make me laugh.
the funniest DM, awkward DM I've ever gotten was somebody wanted to pay me money to wrestle a small man.
Oh, that's really good.
It was a very elaborate request, like multiple paragraphs. I had to screenshot it and send it to like all my family and friends because I was literally peeing my pants laughing, reading it over and over and over and over.
I mean, that's one thing we didn't get to talk about. I'm going to start a podcast, going to have you on because I want to hear about the gladiator stuff too.
Yeah. Well, when you started talking about movie sets, like I signed all my contracts. I can talk about it now. But there's so many interesting things about the filming process. I'm like, these people don't even know what athletes are. Like this is so, they're like living in their little TV world.
We'll hear about that.
So yeah, we'll totally talk about that. Okay, well, give Kara and Chaplin our best. Thank you for your time and your humor. And you guys, go check out Luke Cook and all of his work. And what do you have being released in the next year? Can you tell it that you can tell us about?
Yeah, we've got, I'm coming out in season 2 of Dollface, which is on Hulu, which this first season was so great. So I'm in season 2, which is going to be really fun. And other than that, just watch this space. I'm trying to get a couple of TV shows made that are my own. So I think that'll happen in the next year. But Dollface, in the meantime, on Hulu, season 2, comes out February 1st.
I love it. Well, if any of those agents are looking for a gynecologist, you know who to call. Just saying. All right. Thanks, Luke. Everybody have a good night. Bye. Welcome to the Fit and Fabulous podcast with Dr. Jamie Seaman.